And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, January the 20th, 2016. 1:11 coming up on 1:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we certainly thank you, Downs, for being our guest in hour number one. Coming up in about 3 minutes here, we're going to be joined by legendary actor, CBS News commentator, former correspondent on 60 Minutes 2, Charles Grodin. I'm sure your kids remember him from the movie Beethoven, and he will be along here in just a moment. He is starring in Madoff, the story of Bernie Madoff, which will be on ABC Television Network February 3rd and 4th. So just right around the corner. It's a mini-series. You won't want to miss that. And Charles is always an interesting guest, so you certainly will want to stay tuned for this, because you never know where an interview with Charles is going to go. Sometimes he's in a good mood and everything goes fine, and sometimes he's a little bit curmudgeon-y and things go a little rough, so it's kind of hard to tell. But we will find out today. He's one of the all-time great talk show guests. There's no doubt about that. So let's just say, in the pantheon of talk show guests, he is absolutely amazing. So it will be fun to have Charles Grodin on here momentarily. Do you have any thoughts or instances, or does anything come to your mind about Hugh Downs, a great, great guy turning 95 on Valentine's Day? Hard to believe. Give me a call if you do here real quick, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944 if you have a thought on anything the legendary Hugh Downs said in the last segment. But remember, Charles Grodin coming up here momentarily. And tomorrow here on the show, Thursday, January 21st, live in the studio, former United States Republican representative from the 7th District, Clarence J. Bud Brown, live in studio tomorrow, January the 21st, from 12:10 until 2 p.m. He was United States Deputy Secretary of Commerce and Acting Secretary of Commerce under President Ronald Reagan. And he was also in the journalism business, so that'll be very interesting. So that's tomorrow. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, come back with Charles Grodin right after this. Everybody's talking about Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio, from legendary comedian Kay Ballard performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the Tomb of King Tut, there's a Chuck Full of Nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a big Burger King where the styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised a wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
Well, what would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, Scott? Oh, it's naughty! But it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
I will
do anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. Because just let me talking and I keep going.
It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Join me. And Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday, January the 20th, 2016. 16 minutes past the hour, and as I say, today is a very fun day for me. In our first hour, we were joined by legendary newsman Hugh Downs, who turns 95 on February 14th. I can't imagine that. Thank you, you, so much for coming on the program. And another reason that makes this such a special day is the gentleman who's with us right now. And there's actually a little Jack Parr tie there that we might get into if we have time. This man's been on this program before. He is one of my favorite guests, no matter what the topic. He is, and he's a fantastic actor. And let me tell you, you're going to get a chance to view some of his fantastic acting, because he is in the pantheon of great actors, coming up on February 3rd and 4th on the ABC Television Network. He's a part of the ABC miniseries Madoff, on the life of Bernie Madoff, which stars Richard Dreyfuss as Bernie Madoff. And you're not going to want to miss this, because I'm sure this is going to be ratings galore. Before I tell you who the guest is, I want to play a clip, because he's one of the all-time great talk show guests, period. David Letterman, Johnny Carson, he did it all. Want to play a bit of this gentleman, Charles Grodin, by the way, on David Letterman back in, I think this is 2004. Take a listen. In a moment.
I didn't realize you were a...
Of course you did. I've been on this show for years telling you this.
The Right Kind of People. What's this all about, The Right Kind of People?
The Right Kind of People is about a Fifth Avenue co-op board in New York. Co-op board is where you have to go and apply to live in the building.
Yeah, it's hell. It's just
And they look you over, and it's very hard. There's an article in the paper today, actually, about how difficult it is. A person like you, for example, would never get in.
I got in, but I know what
no,
you
no,
mean.
No, no, no.
No, I got
no,
in.
No, no,
I got
no, no,
in.
No. You're in a co-op building?
Yes,
you,
I'm
you
in.
You went in front of a co-op board and you're in?
Yes, and I'm in.
Are you serious?
Yes, and a revered member of the cooperative.
What are you on the east or west side?
I'm downtown.
No.
What do you mean? What do you mean? What does that mean? What is...
No, I'm talking about Fifth Avenue in the 70s.
Oh, I'd have no interest in that.
You would never get in.
Yeah, I'd get in.
No, I'll tell you why you wouldn't get in.
No, they wouldn't get in. I wouldn't want them in. I don't want them in that building.
No, I'm talking about the Park View on Fifth Avenue, right next door to Klaus von Bülow's building. And you would not get in, and I'll tell you why.
They let Klaus von Bülow in, and I can't get in?
Right.
That's awful.
Well, no, here's the reason. You know, the people would say about you, you know, he's very funny on television. Yeah. He looks like a very jolly guy and all this stuff. Yeah. But if you're ever alone in an elevator with him, which I've never been with you, thank God, but I have crossed your path backstage, and it's one of the most chilling experiences.
He could make Letterman and Carson laugh like nobody, and hopefully he brings that great talk show vernacular here today and preps up this show. And by the way, he wrote a book a few years ago, sent me a copy of it. I love this book, by the way. I'm sure you can still get it on Amazon. If I Only Knew Then, Learning from Our Mistakes, Charles Grodin and Friends of Friends and Friends. Oh, Alan Alda, Carol Burnett, Gene Wilder. What a great book. Let's get him on here. Charles Grodin. Charles, are you still there?
What's your biggest mistake, Scott? Aside from having me on your show.
Yeah, booking you on the show today would be right up there.
Well, that would be number one. That's a given.
Yeah, what a way to start an interview, Charles.
Well, look, I mean that in the nicest way.
Okay, let's see here.
My favorite line when I was on the board of that Fifth Avenue Co-op was a guy, they did research like you were going to be the head of the CIA just to get an apartment, and one guy was arrested for going the wrong way down a one-way street, and they just assumed he was an alcoholic. And he said... And this friend of mine, Gideon Rothschild, said, well, where are rich people with drinking problems supposed to live?
Well, there you go.
And he was right.
Everybody's got to go somewhere.
Everybody's got to go somewhere. Look, look, here we are.
Well, see, you've knocked me off my game, Charles, but I want to answer this question, because usually when I'm interviewing somebody, the first exchange is usually not a question in my direction.
I understand that. Yeah. That's why I do it.
Well, I'm glad you do. Okay, what is my biggest mistake? Biggest mistake.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's a
aside
tough
from
one.
Keeping having me back on.
Back you, yeah, I know. That's.
What do you think, Scott? Here we have Donald Trump, whom I know, and now Sarah Palin is now going to be, they're going to be the two people running for president and vice president on the Republican side. Do you express a feeling about that, or do you try to stay neutral on politics?
Do you want me to answer the question?
I do.
Okay, hold on. Biggest mistake. Biggest mistake is, oh boy. You know, that's tough when you actually have to. How long did it take you to think of your biggest mistake? I know it's in the book here.
Oh, yeah, not long.
It didn't take long at all.
It was right there.
It was when I was a teenager, and I wasn't. I didn't really do what my dad expected of me. And even though looking back, I feel like I was right. It upset him so much that I wish I had done it. Even though I don't agree with him.
You know what just popped in my mind? It's not that personal. That's personal. Mine's not
okay.
That personal, but a few years ago, you know the famed actor Ed Asner.
Yes.
Okay. Ed Asner, we do a charity event here every year for sometimes it's juvenile diabetes, sometimes it's cancer, but we do a big charity show get-together in November.
Right.
And we invited Ed Asner in.
Right.
And Ed Asner came in, and the mayor gave him a proclamation.
Right.
And we thought, boy, this will be great. It's Ed Asner Day here in Marion. This is going to be fantastic. Well, the mayor ended up not being able to come that night, but he sent the proclamation.
Right.
And I went up on stage and I read this proclamation to
right.
Ed Asner.
Right.
And then I left the stage. And you know, when you're hosting a show like that, people are talking to you as soon as you walk up, so I didn't get to hear what Ed was saying, but I heard this uproarious laughter.
Uh-huh.
So I go back on stage, and I didn't know what had happened, but I said, "But yeah, that's great, Ed, thank you so much." And when I went back and watched the tape, Ed had said, I don't give an expletive that we can't say on radio
right.
About this mayor's proclamation if he doesn't have the time to come down here and present it to me himself.
Uh-huh.
And the mayor found out about this, and now the mayor won't do proclamations for me anymore. So that was a regret.
Well, that's okay. That's not the worst thing you can say.
Could I have made the book with that one, Charles?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good, that's an inside showbiz story, isn't it?
Well, it's personal.
Yeah, that was personal. I felt
that's
terrible.
What I was looking. I'm always looking for somebody to reveal something personally. I don't want them to do damage to themselves, because I just don't want people to do that who are involved with me, but it's a good story.
Well, see, and I like Ed Asner. I think Ed Asner's fantastic. I like the mayor. I think he's fantastic. But, you know, as I said to the mayor, I can't control Ed Asner. He's not a puppet.
Or look, you're lucky you can control yourself.
Just barely some days.
Barely.
Barely. Now, we're talking about question number two here on the Charles Grodin Show. What was the next one? Was it political?
Well, the next one, if I were you and I was interviewing me, I would say, what are you doing? What are you working on? What are you doing right now? That's what I would advise you if we weren't on the radio. Or even though we are on the radio, I would still say the same thing
but
to you. I would say, Charles Grodin, what are you doing?
Now, didn't we cover that, though, Charles? Didn't I plug the Madoff thing already?
Yeah, but you didn't do the next one.
Oh, there's another one?
Yeah, right after that, I'm doing a movie with Robert De Niro called The Comedian.
Ooh.
And
oh, that's great.
We begin filming in February, and I just got off the phone with somebody where they wanted to do a table read, you know, where everybody, all the actors come in, and we were around a table, De Niro and five or six other people you would have heard of, and I would have too, but who's got the time to start listing names? And I said to the agent, I said, you know, I'm not making that much money on this thing. Ask them to send a car for me to pick me up, to bring me in, because I don't live in Manhattan. And then I thought a minute, and I called back. I said, ask them to send a car to take me home too. This is a reading on tomorrow. And the answer was yes to both. So I don't know what the moral of that story is, except you have to know your boundaries. And I thought it would be appropriate. You know, there's not huge money involved here. They should send a car to pick me up and to take me home after the reading in New York tomorrow morning at 9:30. And they will. Now they agreed to do that.
Now, Charles, you know I like you, but I just don't know if I believe this story. Because if Robert De Niro's involved, that's got to be big money.
You know, it's hard to make me laugh, but I like you, but I don't know if I believe this story is a good one. Well, let's just say he's getting big money.
Oh, he cleaned
them
out.
He and two or three other people. In fairness to all of the other people, I'm only working a couple of days, and they're working longer, so it's fine with me. That should be all of our biggest problems.
What is your part in this great The Comedian Ooh, what's that about?
An older comedian who's like a cynical older comedian. A lot of it takes place at the Friars Club. So yesterday and today I've been out getting photographs that I have in my house of Milton Berle with me and Jack Parr with me. Your audience may be too young to even know who some of these people. Regis Philbin and me, President Clinton and me. And I just had that out there. So in the movie, when you see it, when they come by my booth, because I'm the veteran comedian, you'll see all these pictures behind me, and then I'll write a scene that where somebody will say, he actually didn't know any of these people. He just had himself walked in, or whatever the phrase they use to, you know, whatever you got. It's as though I'm standing here talking to President Clinton. Which, in fact, I was.
That's fascinating. Well, you know, and it's amazing, Charles, because in this Bernie Madoff movie, I know you play a guy who's about 105. And
103, and that's 103. Right. And he's living, from what I understand.
He's still living. He's you know, as happy as he ever was.
Yeah, and I just checked out I just looked in the mirror recently, and I am as well.
What, did you ever call this gentleman up at 103 and say...
I thought about it. Scott, you know, I actually thought about it, and then I thought, well, I don't know, it might influence the way I would play the role, and I don't want to do that because I can't even imagine what someone that age would be like, or someone my age would be like.
I bet he has gray hair.
Well, that's more than I have.
Okay, now this Robert De Niro blockbuster, what is the premise of this film? Because we know what the Madoff movie's about.
Well, he's a comedian. He's trying to get involved with the Friars Club, and... somebody told the director, Taylor Hackford, told me that he went to the Friars Club recently. There's a big picture of me up there, which I've only been there once for lunch as somebody's guest, but they got a big picture of me at the Friars Club, which I feel is very flattering, so I appreciate it.
Well, that is flattering, because I didn't know, and don't take this the wrong way.
No, don't take it the right way.
No, don't please don't. I didn't know you're a comedic actor, certainly. But yes. I did not know you were a comedian, like a Friars Club stand-up comedy.
I've actually done some of that as well for charities.
I didn't know.
But essentially, my big goal professionally is to not leave the house.
Oh, that's the next goal? After this De Niro blockbuster?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really... I do this because my wife wants me to do it. And so I'll do it. But I generally don't go somewhere for 12 hours and... My big thing is not about money or billing, about how long do you want me to be there. And even though I like everybody, I don't want to go anywhere for 12 hours.
No, now this is interesting, Charles. Now let's say I just told you my most embarrassing or regretful moment. If I ever said, Charles, it's November, I want you to come and accept this proclamation from the mayor, we're going to raise some money for a charity.
Where?
To Ohio. You've been here.
Ohio. That's not near Connecticut.
Well, no, but we could get you a plane.
That's okay. Thanks anyway, though.
Well, that's nice. Thank you so much, Charles. That's very kind of you. You could come, couldn't you? What else do you have to do?
I tell you, I might go downstairs later.
You might go downstairs. Okay, well.
I mean, we have a very nice apartment in Manhattan. I've been there 3 times in the last 10 years. I'm serious, Scott. I really am. I don't really want to go anywhere. I will go tomorrow. As I said, they'll pick me up in the morning. They'll bring me home like around noon, and that'll be it. And that's fine.
Okay.
And I don't regret any of it. I see that as a good way to do it.
I see so. I see it too. Now here's something though I would like to see in this film, Charles, and maybe you could pass this along tomorrow.
Sure.
There are 3 great. Who I consider Friars Club comedians who are still with us. There are more than that.
Yes.
But Dick Gregory,
right.
Pat Cooper, and Irwin Corey.
Right.
All still alive.
How old is Irwin Corey?
Irwin Corey's 101 years old.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, why isn't he in the
guest when I had my cable show? I'm so happy to hear that. He's 101. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Shouldn't he be in the film?
Yeah.
Can you make that happen? Do you have that kind of pool?
Yeah. I can make that happen. If he's up for it, to come and be somewhere, then I'll get him in the movie. Yeah, I can make that happen.
Well,
it wouldn't be such a big achievement on my part, because who wouldn't want him there?
Oh, he's a funny, funny guy. Funny, funny
fabulous.
Guy.
Fabulous. And I had him as a guest on my talk show in the mid-90s on CNBC. And, yeah, I'm gonna. That's my next call, to get Irwin Corey in this movie.
You had him on your talk show? Now, see...
Yeah, oh, yeah.
See,
yeah,
Irwin...
Professor Irwin Corey.
Oh, Irwin claimed to me that he was blacklisted by NBC, but you went right through that. You got past that.
Probably. That's happened.
Yeah, that's a shame, because Irwin is very funny.
I don't even understand what the blacklist was about. Somebody, you don't like what somebody says? So what? That's what we call America.
Yeah, that. Well, I don't know what that whole thing was about. But when you've lived over a century, like
yeah.
Professor Corey, you got into some stuff back then.
That's going to be my phone call. Right after this one, I'm gonna call and say, get Irwin Corey in this movie. Then I'm going to visit with my beloved son, who lives on our property. I don't know, you're probably not old enough to remember, maybe some of your audience remembers Bob and Ray, the comedians.
Oh,
they were
yes.
the biggest comedians in the country when I was growing up. And Bob is the grandfather of the young lady that my son married a year ago.
How is Bob?
Bob is great. He was at the wedding. And, of course, I actually went up to Maine to visit him because he asked me to. And, which is really something, because I said I barely go downstairs, let alone go to Maine. But Bob asked me. Maine's big, you know. You probably know all this. I didn't know that. The flight to Maine was about 40 minutes long, and the drive to his house was like an hour and a half.
Is that right?
Yeah, really. The drive to his house was twice as long as the flight from JFK to Maine.
Now Bob is on in years now, is he not?
Bob is 102.
He's not 102.
How old is he?
How old? Well, didn't you talk to him at the wedding?
Well, how old do you think he is?
I think Bob is probably in his 90s.
Okay, let's go with what you say.
So you really don't know how old Bob is?
Well, I don't even know how old you are.
Well, I don't think that's relevant, but you didn't spend time at a...
No, but I would if you got married nearby.
In Maine? If I get married in Maine?
Oh, nearby in Connecticut, where I am.
Oh, but we went all the way to Maine to see Bob.
Well, for Bob Elliott.
Bob Elliott, but you didn't... Did you talk to him?
Yeah, I visited. We had a very nice time, and he's still living, God bless him.
Bob is...
And my son married his granddaughter, and she's a doll. I keep saying, come on over, bring her over.
But Bob is 92, for those listening.
Bob Elliott is 9... No, who?
Yes, Bob Elliott is 92, for those interested at this point.
That's all?
Yeah, I know, that's a youngster.
I thought he was older than that.
No, 92.
Well, he was great. It was wonderful to be with him. Wonderful to see him at the wedding. And oh, yes, and there was also someone else who was 92 at the wedding, and that was Stanley Donen, who co-directed Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly.
Now, how come you know Stanley's age, but you didn't know Bob Elliott's age?
Well, because Stanley is in a relationship with a good friend of mine, Elaine May. So I would have more contact with Stanley Donen than with Bob. But they were both there. Everybody was dancing. To me, the highlight of the wedding was the head of 60 Minutes, Jeff Fager, who doesn't know my son, didn't know any of these people. He actually, this is all true, it's hard to believe it. He asked if he could come to the wedding. And there was my wife produced this wedding, and it was on the water in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. And there's Jeff Fager, the head of 60 Minutes, dancing up a storm on the dance floor.
Well,
it's something you don't forget.
No, well, Jeff Fager, you know, he's the big muckety muck over there.
And there he is dancing up a storm. And I talked to him after that, and I commented on that, and he said, I was just getting started. So you never know quite who you're talking to or what they've done.
Well, now see, this is interesting, Charles, because this is one of my questions. Because Jeff Fager, the big head over there at 60 Minutes, you know, Andy Rooney, God bless him, has passed away. But you kind of did the Andy Rooney bit on 60 Minutes 2 when that was around.
When they had that on Wednesday, right?
Absolutely.
And I was the only person in the history of 60 Minutes who quit.
You quit?
I quit.
Now, why'd you quit?
Because one day they didn't run me, and I just thought... And I quit, and then Jeff Fager said, well, I mean, this is the only time this has ever happened. I said, look, my contract says I can't do movies, I can't do theater, I can't do anything but this. And if I'm going to prepare for this two-minute spot every week and then it's not run, if I know that possibility exists, then I don't want the deal. And in spite of me quitting, he's still a good friend of mine.
Well, you know, if anybody could fill... the spot that Andy Rooney has left, it would be you, Charles.
Well, that's very flattering, but you know, my feelings for Andy are, Andy was special, and I managed to be friendly with him. I remember sitting with him and Walter Cronkite, asking them about their experiences. They were with Stars and Stripes. They were two of the first journalists to enter the concentration camps after World War II. And I was asking them all these questions. The three of us just were out together. And Andy Rooney suddenly turns and looks at me and he says, you know, acting is a secondary profession. Still not sure what that meant, but I remember the moment.
he was taking a little dig at you there.
That's what he does.
Yeah, he did do that when he was living. He was very good at that.
We were out, my wife and Andy's wife, the four of us were out, and he says to me, he's sitting next to me, looks at me sideways, and he says, my wife really enjoys your commentaries. And then he looked over at my wife expecting a smile, but she just stared at him.
Oh.
And then a little later he came back with, I enjoy your work on the radio, because at the time I was on the radio, I still am on CBS Radio as well.
Andy just, he knew how to make a dinner party move.
Well, you know, to me, I'm not that big on judgment, I'm just big on recollection. And I just enjoyed that I was actually sitting with Walter Cronkite and Andy Rooney. I mean, that's what stays in my mind. And both of them had, not that long prior to this dinner, had lost their wives, and both of them were with other women quickly.
Really?
And I couldn't help but notice that, I think it was Andy, he had his hand on the thigh of the woman he was with, whose name I'm just not going to mention, but she was a famous woman, an older woman as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
My, behind the scenes there with Andy Rooney.
Oh my God, that's right behind the scenes.
Now, if Jeff Fager asked you to come back and do, because I missed that on Sunday night, your little 2-minute
segment.
Yeah,
they don't have that.
No, would you do
it?
I
think it's a very good idea. I don't know about me, but it's a good idea because, you know, news is always, if it's news, it's probably bad. Good news doesn't make it. So it was always good that at the end of the thing you had Andy with a 2-minute commentary, whatever he was going to talk about.
But you can't just wheel somebody in there, Charles. You can't just have, you know.
No, I sit up and take fluids.
Why? Well, I understand.
You don't have to wheel me in.
I'm glad to hear that. But you know, well, Andy toward the end, I don't know how mobile he was, but he still got there.
Oh yeah.
He was proud of building that desk. It's very interesting, Charles, because our guest in hour number one was Hugh Downs. Oh, you missed it. Man, it was
well,
good.
Well, I was good friends with Jack Parr.
That's the tie-in that I wanted to bring up here, because Hugh Downs was Jack Parr's announcer.
And you say Hugh Downs is what, 92?
95.
95, wow.
They're getting up there. Yeah.
That's amazing. Wonder where is he? Where does he live? What state?
He's out in Arizona.
Yeah. People go to Arizona.
Yeah, he does.
Alan Arkin lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Shirley MacLaine lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I don't know. I've probably been to New Mexico. I don't remember, but it sounds like a place that people like to be. I'll tell you, in these dark, dreary days of the fall in New England, New Mexico is starting to look good.
Well, this is the thing, Charles. Do you think you might have some kind of agoraphobia, not leaving the house and not wanting to travel?
Yes.
Maybe you should see somebody.
Well, like who?
Like a psychiatrist.
Oh, I could tell them stuff.
Oh, you could tell them stuff.
I went to a psychiatrist recently.
Oh,
and,
good.
And it was like a joke to me, because my feeling was, What does he know that I don't know about my, because I was like 25 years older than he. What is it he's going to ask me? Like, what is it, your worries? What's the big insight to become a psychiatrist at God knows how much money an hour?
Well, because he could give you a prescription. I don't think you can write prescriptions.
Well, that would be the main thing.
Yeah, I think that maybe is what needs to happen.
And he did, Scott.
Oh.
He did. This is to sleep. And not Valium, they don't do that anymore. It's just sleep and relax you, and it had absolutely no effect on me whatsoever. None. Because what a lot of doctors do, and I understand that they want to err on the side of caution. So So they don't want to give you something. It's like if you have a drink, you don't want to get behind the wheel of a car. And they're afraid of what effect that the prescription might have. Maybe it'll make you sleepy. Then you start. I would never do anything like that. But so whatever they do, it's useless to me because it has no effect. It's in other words, they're erring on the side of caution to such a degree. There's no benefit.
I bet if they up the dosage, there'd be some benefit.
Well, that's going to be my question.
Yeah, I think they could probably up the dosage.
They really are trying to protect themselves, and I understand that. And I don't want anything that's going to be damaging. But I said I'm not driving. You know, do that. But I don't know.
I tell you what, Charles.
It's of no effect whatsoever.
You give me your doctor's name when we're off the air, and I'll send him a copy of this interview, and I'm sure they'll up your dosage.
Well, I'd rather do that directly.
Well, I can make it happen for you. Now, all kinds of interesting stuff with you. The other night, and you may or may not want to comment on this, you know, you never know, but I was looking at some of your old CNBC shows,
right.
And one of your guests was Bill Cosby.
Yes.
And I watched it, and yes. This is back, you know, 20, 25 years ago. Bill seemed to be a little, because what the episode was about, for those who haven't seen it, you can go to YouTube and watch it. Charles is talking about how the first time he met Bill Cosby, Bill got mad at him when they were on The Tonight Show for a multitude of reasons.
Right.
And then on the cable show, you guys kind of seemed uncomfortable with each other, although I don't want to say that. So what's your take on Bill Cosby?
Well, I'm not for cheating or even flirting. I don't do anything like that, so I don't really know. I don't know all the facts. You know, the stuff is reported, but you don't know. I wish him the best, but he's got to pay whatever penalty there is that for whatever it is he did or women claim he did, and that's why we have the court system. But I wouldn't want to comment because I don't have the facts, and I wasn't a witness, and obviously I wasn't there.
Right. But I guess more of, off-camera, is he a likable guy? It did seem like
Absolutely.
There was... Oh, he is. He's a very nice man.
Oh, yeah. You would never think there was anything, any issue at all, no.
Well, let's hope it goes the way that it needs to go. Now...
Right. Good way to put it.
Yeah, that's right. You got into a question earlier on, and then you abandoned it, so I assume it was something on your mind about Trump and Palin.
Yeah, it's kind of, let's just say, unusual that those should be the two people running for president and vice president. You know, Trump is like an egomaniac, and Sarah Palin, with all due respect, is, you know, I don't see her as qualified to be the Vice President of the United States.
So why are they winning?
Because a lot of people may know better than I do, or they know something, but, you know, the best person doesn't necessarily always win, and I just hope if they do win that they'll be... You know, I know Trump a little bit, and what you see is what you get. I mean, you know, I remember sitting with him at a table somewhere and him saying, I used to enjoy watching your show on CNBC, and I said, "Yeah, I'm with 60 Minutes now." And he said, "I don't watch 60 Minutes."
Oh, see.
I just thought, "Oh, okay, uh-huh, right."
See, but you needed to steer the conversation toward him. Then you would have gotten.
Yeah, I think that's right. But let's just be grateful that we don't have that need.
Well, no, we don't have that need. But this man could be the next leader of the free world, Charles.
I hope. I don't know. I really don't know. I would find that a little scary.
Do you have a pick here from what we've seen so far?
Well, I just that he said that we should go over to Iraq, take the weapons, whatever they have over there, and then bring them back. You know, these guys never served in the military. So when they say take the weapons, they're not actually there, nor were they ever there, what they call boots on the ground. So it's easy to say go over there, take the weapons. You know, a war will break out. You just don't go into another country and take whatever weapons they have. I mean, you just don't. But they, you know, they act in a way, but they're not part of it. They just comment on it.
That's true. Now you still do a commentary for CBS Radio Network. Now, it's kind of a unique thing. Tell people what you do who haven't heard these pearls of wisdom.
Well, I do commentary 5 days a week, one every day, and they're repeated on the weekends. And I can talk about whatever I want. And pretty soon I'm going to, let's see, today is, Wednesday?
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so I usually do them on Thursday, and I'll just phone them in. And I can talk about anything I want. One time, I won't say censor me, but I did something about Governor Christie of New Jersey, and the producer said, you know, it's coming off like you're making a crack about his weight. And I said, don't run it. That's not my intention.
Oh. Well,
so any time I've ever gotten, you know, the higher-ups to say, I feel this, I say, okay, fine. This is why I have a good marriage for 35 years. I'm very good on whatever you want.
Well, what did you say?
I don't remember what I said. I just said don't run it if that's how it comes off. But I don't want to be one of these people who just takes digs, and
no.
I just don't do that.
No,
only for comedy, and the person who's getting the dig taken has to be laughing, otherwise it fails.
Absolutely. Now, do you have one of these commentaries laying around that you could share with us?
Laying around.
Sitting there. Do you write them out?
How about this one? I was on the phone the other day with a radio show host from the Midwest, and he asked me if I had any commentaries laying around, and I just bit my tongue so I wouldn't say, I think you say, lying around.
Well,
you're right.
Holy mackerel. Okie doke.
Yeah, you got to be careful with okie doke. Okie dokie.
Now, yeah. Charles, now you've said many times that this persona that you play on talk shows, that's just a persona, right? That cranky guy.
That's my claim.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it's a persona, but I don't even do it anymore.
We can certainly tell that by today's interview.
Well, I hope so.
You sure you don't want me to get? You don't want to give me your doctor's number?
No, but I'll tell you somebody you should be in touch with my son, because you know the biggest goal you want, Mike. I'm sure I'm not alone in saying this, as a parent, to have your son, in my case, have a son and a daughter who are both better than I am, and off the air, you'll maybe send me an email. I don't know how we do that. I don't even know. But
do you have his number lying around?
Yeah, but I don't want to say it on the air.
Well, not on the air. No, of course not.
You might want to have both of them on.
Both of your kids.
So if you would call me and just leave a message, because I don't want to do it on the air because for their privacy.
Well, of course
I'll give you a way to contact both of them. And my son, you can write their names down. My daughter's Marion, Marion.
Okay. Well, that's the city we're in.
She's a headlining stand-up comedian.
Well, she is. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
And my son is just smarter and funnier than I am, and he's only 28.
And what's his name?
Nick.
Nick. Okay. Now here's the thing, Charles. And boy, we're down to the final 10 minutes, which is hard to believe, because this is just blown by. But you know, last time we did this, and I don't know if you remember, I had you on the show, and you were telling me about your pantheon of famous friends, you know, Regis Philbin and Jack Parr and Phil Donahue and the whole, you know, mess of them. And I said, "Oh, Charles, you know, I don't want to impose on you, but Phil Donahue is very hard to get on, and what a fascinating interview he would be at this point with Trump running and everything." And he said, "Oh, I'll call Phil. I'll see if he'll do the show. He'll do your show." I said, "Well, give him the whole hour, you know, like we give you. Just the whole hour." And that never happened.
It never happened.
No, and
yes.
I felt terrible.
When we finish this interview, just call me back with a telephone number where I can call you, and I'll leave you a message, and I'll give you an email for Phil Donahue, Marion Groden, and Nick Groden. And in my email, I'll describe, you know who Phil Donahue, but I'll describe what the others are doing, and you'll have some interesting guests there.
But now, do you, and I do want to have your kids on, because I think this is fascinating, what Charles Grodin's children are doing. That's a back-to-back episode right there, especially if she's a stand-up comedian.
One of my children is 55 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Amazing.
That is amazing. Now, but Phil Donahue, now, when I say, "Hey, Charles Grodin gave me your email," now he's going to jump all over that, right?
Well, I wouldn't do it without getting clearance from him first.
Oh, you have to get clearance from him.
I would.
Now, why do you think he won't? I mean, do you think he'll do it, Charles? Because we're hopeful. You know, he's from Dayton, Ohio. Here, he did his little show.
I
don't know why we
can't. Personally, I don't think he'll do it, but that doesn't mean I won't try for you.
Well, can't you?
You give me a number to call. Once, just leave a message for me on the number you just called, and remind me, Phil Donahue, Marion Groden, Nick Groden.
Now, why do you think Phil won't do it?
He has no interest in it.
No interest in it.
I mean, what's he doing? I mean,
I don't know. What is he doing?
I don't know. I mean, you have to ask yourself, why would they do it? We've done this before, you and I, but it's not like I'm hoping as a result of this interview, such and such is going to happen. Because I know who you are, I know you, and I enjoy talking to you. As far as Phil, I would say he wouldn't because I don't know. My experience with him tells me he wouldn't.
Well, this is interesting because here's the irony of this, Charles. Phil, I wouldn't assume he would need any help getting a job if he wanted one. So I don't think this show would be a caveat for that. And he spent his life interviewing people, so he should know how hard it is to book guests.
And I'm sure he does. That's why he doesn't do it anymore.
That's why he doesn't do it anymore. That's why.
Right.
Now, boy, can you imagine Phil Donahue talking about Donald Trump?
I think it'd be tremendous.
Oh, he'd be fascinating, but he's got to. What does he do these days? What do he and Marlo do?
I haven't talked to him for a while. I'm not sure what he does. I just haven't been in touch. But I'll find out. You call me back. I won't pick up the phone. You just leave a message with your number. I don't know. Do you have an email for me?
I do have an email. But do you do email?
I don't, no, but my son is doing it now for me.
Oh, your son is doing your email.
Yeah, he's taking over stuff for me.
Oh, all right. Well,
but he's a dude. He's somebody that he's a big stud. Oh. 6'4".
6'4".
You're not old enough to remember Bob and Ray from radio.
We did this already, didn't we?
I don't know, but
yeah, Bob's 92.
Bob's 92, but Bob's granddaughter is married to my son.
We discussed that. Remember, you went to the wedding in Maine.
Yeah, but you can't hear enough of this. Some things have to be repeated.
It was a fabulous story.
Turning on, if anyone's turning on at all.
Did you?
I don't even know we're on the radio.
Well, we're on the radio. Trust me. I've got it archived down.
I've been told you tell that to people all the time. Otherwise, people wouldn't take your call if they feel they're on the radio.
Well, you took my call.
Well, I know you're on the radio.
Okay. Now, Charles, you were giving us one of your spine-tingling CBS commentaries, and you took a little jab at me there in the meantime.
Which one?
Yeah, I don't know. You didn't do one.
I took a jab at you?
You did.
What'd I say?
You said, I was talking to this radio host in the Midwest the other day, and he asked me to read a commentary. Boy, before I die, I'd want to make a Charles Grodin commentary. I mean, throw dirt on me once that's done.
I see. Uh-huh. So what did I do bad? What's bad in there for you?
Well, that's not a commentary.
Oh, it's not a conscious.
That's not a real commentary. That was just you being difficult.
That's just an observation.
No, I think it was difficult. I think it was you being difficult. But
Are you married?
Oh, here we go again. What is all the personal... What do you need personal information?
You have
children? I refuse to answer on the grounds.
That's okay. That's fair.
No. I am not married. No.
No, if you want to be... You don't have to self-incriminate yourself with me.
No, I already did. If I was married, I wouldn't have time to watch the big Madoff thing coming up on the 3rd and 4th of February.
Yeah, that's when it's on, yeah, with Dreyfus.
Yeah, are you going to watch that? Is that going to be a big thing?
Yeah, they rescheduled it. It wasn't scheduled to be. They rescheduled it to be on during sweeps where they grasp the ratings.
I think it's on during the Super Bowl.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's where they scheduled it.
Good luck.
It'll be just a great timekeeper.
The next thing, which I start in a month or so with De Niro, that should be a good one. The Comedian is called.
Now, is that going in theaters, or is that...
Yeah, that's a movie.
Oh. Now, when's the last time you did a big blockbuster movie?
I don't even know, because I don't do that much.
But
I don't even remember.
What do you still want to do in life, Charles?
Good for anyone I can, help anyone I can, put a smile on people's face, get people out of prison who shouldn't be there, all the things that I've aspired to for the last 25 years or more.
That's a good answer. That's a good.
Thank you.
Well, and you know,
written down.
It sounded like it. What's interesting, Charles, is every time you come on the show, there's no real what I would call point, but it's just it's radio gold. You know, these are the things years from now, because essentially, whether you know it or not, you kind of are that guy on Letterman and Carson. Maybe toned down about three notches, but you're very similar.
I saw Letterman on television the other day. He had a long gray beard. Literally.
Was that a problem?
No, it just was odd to see him that way, because I remember him when he had a full head of curly hair when he was starting out.
Don't you have to go out and promote this Madoff movie?
No.
No?
I mean, if they asked me to do something, you know, I'd have to look and see where, when. Like, tomorrow I'm going for a reading of this movie I'm doing with De Niro, and just today I called and the agent and I said, they want me to come in and do a reading of it. This isn't an audition. It's already cast.
No, we already did this, Charles. We did this.
I know, but they'll send a car.
They're going to send a car.
Is this live on the air?
Yes. Are you calling Professor Irwin Corey as soon as we get off the phone?
I'll try to get a number for you.
No, I know his number.
I don't have a number for him. But
I've had him on. Right. I've had him on the show.
Well, and you say he's 92?
What? 101.
101.
Bob Elliott is 92. A member of your family.
Bob
and
Elliott and Stanley Donner are 92, and Irwin Corey is 101.
Yes, and Hugh Downs is 95.
Is this a test?
Now that we've taken roll, maybe
I'm going to try to get Irwin Corey for you.
Well, I don't need him. I've had him on the show.
Well, so you have a contact for him.
I do have contact information for him.
Well, so you don't need me for this.
I didn't ask you to get Irwin Corey's contact info.
Let's not get ugly here, Scott.
No, I'm sorry. It's getting a little... Yeah, it's tense. Phil Donahue. Remember?
Yeah.
But you say he's not going to do it anyway, so I don't know.
No, he's not.
There's
no... But call and give me a phone number.
There's no point at this point, is there, Charles?
There might be.
Well, you just said there's no dice. He doesn't do that. He's bigger than that. He's got things
Maybe
to
I'll
do.
Maybe I'll think of somebody else for you.
Who would you have? If you were going to book my show, somebody who's going to have fun on this thing, who would it be?
Vice President Gore, because he was the first one to talk about climate change.
Oh, you know Vice President Gore?
No, I don't know him, but I know about climate change. I probably do know him. I don't remember.
Well, how are you going to get his phone number?
Oh, I could do that. But you have to tell me. You have to call me back on my line. I won't answer. Leave the message and tell me who you want.
Now, wait a second. Why won't you answer?
Well, because I want information from you. This is not further chatting. I generally don't talk to anyone unless I'm on the radio or television.
You're kind of a shut-in.
Well, shut down.
A shutdown, which is why you're going to see that neurosurgeon again, that psychiatrist, and he's gonna help you out with your dosage.
Did I tell you that?
No, yeah, we talked about that. Do you don't remember
well,
that?
I'm sure you're right.
Maybe the pills are working.
That's fine.
You know, I am sure that people are going to tune into Madoff without a doubt after listening to this interview, because this, you know, this right here goes in the National Broadcast Archives.
Well, Dreyfus is an amazing person. He's dealt with a lot of serious physical issues. Somebody told me he sued three of his ex-wives. I was sitting with him waiting to film, and he was viciously attacking Tim Russert.
Whoa!
The director came over, and I made fun of everything he had said to me, and God bless Richard, he was laughing at himself.
Well, that's always
Richard
good.
Richard just had one thing after another. Why doesn't he get them to answer the question? You know, gee, Richard, come on, loosen up a little bit.
He's a little wound up.
He is, but he's so good. He's so gifted.
Oh, Mr. Holland's Opus? What a movie that was. If you had to put one of your films in the time capsule, Charles, what would it be?
Oh, boy. I don't know. That would be kind of self-serving.
Beethoven?
Well, that's a good movie, but if people have never seen a movie called Movers and Shakers, which I wrote, the head of Columbia Pictures said to me at some time in the last decade, Frank Price, He's retired now. He said, it's like you had a tape recording at our meetings. In other words, so if you want to know what goes on behind the scenes in movie studios, you could probably get a copy of Movers and Shakers just to take a look at it.
That's going to be...
Walter Matthau, Steve Martin, Gilda Radner.
Well, that's a great cast.
Yeah.
That's a great... Now, Charles, as we approach the end here, now when are you going to come back? Because, see... You came on like three times last year, and it was great. We had great fun like this, and then something happened, and I don't know, we kept missing each other, which I find hard to believe since you don't leave the house.
Right.
So you'll come back, right?
Well, maybe try a different name.
Oh.
Don't say Scott Spears, you know.
Say Johnny Carson. You'll be right there.
Right there, boom.
Right there, boom. And we'll have more fun like this.
But you leave me your number. Let me try to get you. Tell me who you want. Let me go to work, because I only work pro bono, which is why I'm popular with a lot of people.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
Well, leave us with a little pearl of wisdom today, Charles. Leave us with something that's going to resonate in our minds. Because
all right. Treat everybody the way you would like to be treated.
Oh, that's very good.
Thank you very much.
Charles Grodin.
Call me back. Leave your number.
Talk to the
answer. And I'm going to go to work for you.
Thank you, Charles.
Good to talk to you, Scott.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
God bless you and your audience.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Charles Grodin, Madoff, Richard Dreyfuss, February 3rd and 4th. Don't miss it. We're done for the day. Scott Spears heading for the dugout. WWGH Radio.